Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021.
Today, stock valuation. Lesson today is one of those that some finance professors actually dread. And I figured out how I can make it so that it is not painful to teach and it's not really that hard for you to learn how to do it. How to find the intrinsic price of a share of stock. This is not the market price. This is the long haul price, the overall expected price at the current time. Whether or not the market price is anywhere near that is the matter of whether you buy, hold, or sell a specific stock. And I'll get to that in just a moment or two here. But first, just as a matter to begin this, a quick look at the numbers here. There we go. And as you can see, this was kind of one of those interesting days where the big... Oh, I'm sorry. No, you don't get to see it. Thank you. I have to do so many things. I know I'm going to forget something. I forgot to turn on the recorder in one class one day. Okay, here. Now, have a look. As you can see, it's kind of one of those odd days. The biggest of the biggest companies did the best. And as the company portfolio, the index gets larger of more companies, it begins to slide backward. Dow is up 0.43%, the biggest 30, and then the biggest 500, which includes companies smaller than the Dow 30, is up not as much. And then the NASDAQ got swatted a little bit. Not much. I mean, it's pretty much an insignificant number there, but still. So the good news was... good news, the bigger the company was. And the small caps, they were just not thrilled with whatever it was going on in the news today. Going over here, there you go, crude oil, 84.25, it's looking up there. Now, interestingly, right now, you're not seeing the price of gasoline go up to where it probably ought to be at 84.25 a barrel on the light Brent sweet. There's a lot of gasoline in the pipeline right now, in the system. And so the supply is sufficient to keep the price from really roaring upward. But rest assured, over the next few weeks, if it hits that 90 neckline, like I said it probably will, then you're going to see the price of gas get really, really up there. And that's bad, too, because we're going into the holiday season, more driving and all of that. So good times ahead. Gold and silver had, that's a little bit, I'm beginning to get a little bit concerned here because they are bellwethers of inflation. So when we see, I'd have to look at some other commodities, though, to see what's going on. But there are signs of inflation starting to show up pretty uniformly. Now, the 10-year bond was virtually flat for the day, a tenth of a basis point. That's nothing. The bonds are just sort of sitting there waiting for the next excitement to move them one way or the other. But today, nice quiet day on there. London and Tokyo were both pretty much flat for the day. There was London bounced around a lot, but it finished up flat. Nikkei started out strong, but it lost its steam there about midday in Japan. So it's just nothing there to write home about. All in all, a quiet day on the market for all intents and purposes. And I don't think anyone is expecting anything big for the rest of the week, although we may have a good day tomorrow. We'll see, though. Now, stock represents ownership in a company. Two broad categories, and I've gone through this before, and I'm just sort of recapping. Preferred stock is preferred. It is equity, although it does have odd characteristics of a bond. It has a face value. It has a sort of a coupon. It's called the dividend. And it's not volatile. The price is not volatile because it is essentially anchored on that face value, that par value. I could do one like ZVJ, 1.2% cumulative preferred. Par value, $50 per share preferred. A couple of things. And very, yeah. It does not go up and down a lot. Yeah, it's not violent. I am just real. Oh, I've got it on the wrong. Bear with me. When you don't have remote cameras. A couple of things here. Modern American English is getting rid of proper nouns, capitalizations. It's a pop fad, and lazy English teachers are letting it go and saying, well, this is the way. But I guarantee you that in more formal, legalistic language of businesses, the preferred or the common would be a capital because it's a proper noun. You say, well, wait a minute, you didn't capitalize it up here. This is a descriptor. It's cumulative preferred. And this is a proper noun. So if you see preferred, it probably should be or is going to be capitalized, representing that this is a specific thing that is separate from other things that could be somewhat like it. You are George and you are Harold. Neither of you looks like that, but and those are capital because we're specifically saying this is a very different thing from another kind of stock called common stock. Now, the 1.2% means that a dividend of 1.2% times the face value will be paid every year forever. Every year forever. So that would be 60 cents per share preferred. Per minute. Now, really quickly, well, cumulative. Now, if the preferred is cumulative, that means that the company has to pay this dividend if it wants to pay the shareholders. And if it has not paid the preferred dividend, it cannot pay the common shareholders a dividend until it has caught up on all of its preferred. Understand that the corporation is not obligated to pay that dividend. It's equity. But if it doesn't, it cannot pay the common shareholders a dividend. Dividends are not like coupons. The preferred shareholders can't sue the corporation or anything if they don't get their dividend. But the common shareholders don't get anything. Now, the price right now of this stock is just a flat annuity, D over R. That's all it is. That's its price. It's a perpetuity, and that's the present value of a perpetuity of D dollars per year forever. So I could look here at different R's against the price right now. 1.0, a 1.2%, and a 1.4%. 1.0, that would be the dividend, 60 cents over 0.01, which is $60. If the market rate is required rate is 0.6 is 1.2, and at a required rate of 45. Let me do that on a calculator. I might not have that right. And of course, I forgot to open up the calculator. Okay, so clear. $42.86. Sorry about that. Now notice, and it behaves even a lot like a bond. When the market yield is below the coupon, the bonds of the preferred sells at a premium to its face. When the market is expecting exactly the dividend percentage, it sells at par. And if the market expects more than what the coupon is paying, then the preferred share sells at a discount to par, just like a bond. Excuse me. So that's, in a lot of ways, it's odd because preferred does have that characteristic behavior in a lot of ways of a bond. The big difference is that a preferred share goes on forever. And obviously a bond has a maturity. But still, as a fixed income investment, if an older couple came and said, we've got $10 million, we'd like to put it away someplace relatively safe, this would be something that I would consider. You put it in there, and of course, they're going to get the same check forever from this thing. The one danger, and I'll just bring this up in passing, is that these are vulnerable to inflation, obviously, because if they're getting the same amount of money every year, 60 cents for every share, every year forever, 60 cents is going to lose purchasing power over time as inflation eats away. So that's the downside of preferred. Now, there are different kinds of preferred. There's preferred that is like, there is some preferred that is convertible. The company can convert it after a certain number of years into common stock. I've kind of run into that. I wasn't expecting to see it. It didn't occur to me that that would happen, but it's a thing now. Excuse me. But otherwise, preferred is not very popular to issue anymore, simply because it's a commitment forever to a dividend. I mean, forever. You're committed 60 cents every, in this case, 60 cents every year for the rest of eternity. And that's a long time to be paying a dividend. I mean, by, you know, what, within a half of an eternity, your ledger is going to be awfully long. But anyhow. Now, the other kind of stock is cumulative, or is common. Now, common comes in different flavors and varieties, too. But one thing to bring up first is that every corporation has to file articles of incorporation. That's sort of like its birth document. And there it will say the number of authorized shares. The capital stock of this corporation shall be divided into 100 million shares of common stock, or something like that. It'll say that. That is the total number that could ever be issued by the corporation, ever. I ran into a situation when I was doing consulting. We were going to do a stock offering. They wanted $10 a share for 100,000 shares and to raise $1 million on a Reg D 504. And I mean, it didn't even cross my mind until I grabbed a check to, okay, we're going to sell 100,000 shares. Now, these people had started this company like about 5 years before, and they had a technology that might go somewhere. And so I thought this will be successful. Looked at their articles of incorporation, and they had 50,000 shares authorized. And the four people who were running it, each of them had 10,000 shares. So there were 40,000 shares outstanding of 50,000 authorized. So they had only 10,000 shares that they could sell. They said to me, well, let's just change the number of shares. No, that was not a good idea. I thought, well, how difficult would that be? I had an idea of what was going to have to be done. And sure enough, when I called the Secretary of State of the state of Pennsylvania, the company was registered in Pennsylvania. Yep, sure enough, they said, you're going to have to create a new corporation with lots of stock authorized, you know, like 100 million shares or whatever, and then merge, have that company acquire your company. And so, in other words, it's the old articles of incorporation would be abandoned because it would be part of this new corporation and its articles of incorporation. So it was a painful process, and we didn't get the money raised for months because we went through the fees and the rigmarole of filing new articles of incorporation and doing the legal work to merge the company, to acquire the old company and the new company. It was a mess. So, yeah, once you've off, you want to be careful about how little or how many. Now, in the case, for example, of my company, Emergent Light Studio, it has 1,000 shares authorized. I own 501 shares of that, and so there are 501 shares of 1,000 issued and outstanding. The other 499 would be if I wanted to sell an interest to someone else or to bring in a partner or something like that. Never have yet, but at the same time, well, why, if you know you should have so many shares, why are you doing it this way? Because I plan, intend to this to never be anything but a very small, close, a quote-unquote close corporation. Okay, so that having been said, common stock. Now, I showed you that you can have common stock that is Class A and Class B. The Class A would have supermajority voting. Like Berkshire Hathaway A, Berk A's have supermajority. Berk B's have one vote per share. Walmart, the insiders, have Class A. Ford, a lot of companies. In other words, you don't really have any control whatsoever, so you might as well just, you're buying it for an investment. You're not buying it to help run the company. Now, as far as voting goes, you own one share of stock in a corporation that has four directors, a president, a vice president, a secretary, and a treasurer. That one share gives you one vote for each of those seats, those four offices. Okay, one share. Now, in some corporations, and you have to look at the charter, the bylaws, and the all that. In some, you could concentrate all four of your votes on one position. Okay, he's the vice president. You don't like him. You're going to spend all four of your votes to vote for someone else instead of him. That means you don't get to vote for the president, the treasurer, and the secretary. Now, that's not in every corporation, but it is in some. What was I going to say about this also? Oh, you can go to the shareholders meeting, annual shareholders meeting. You can go there, and you can vote there. And you can participate in the revelry and the partying or not. But I mean, I've gone to annual shareholder meetings. The ones for little tiny companies are miserable affairs. Yeah, we have the conference in the hotel, in the Motel 6 down the street. But the big companies, it's quite a fancy shindig. There's a lot of famous talking and people and entertainment and food and a lot of entertainment of the humankind, as I saw. But now, you most likely, you are going to get a proxy statement. It's going to say, please give me your votes. Because I'm going to vote for myself and the other directors who've been here forever because we are so awesome, we deserve it. So please allow us to vote your shares, your votes for us. That's a proxy statement. You sign it and that's it. You don't have to worry. Most people sign it or they just throw it away. They don't even think what it is. You don't have to sign it though. You can go to the shareholders meeting and do it vote yourself. Or you could have... You're a hostile takeover, black knight. You're going to come and you're going to say, please give us your shares. You're going to be buying shares out in the open market to gather position. That's some votes. But then you're going to look for votes from people like him to strengthen your position to kick my ass out and take over my corporation. That's a black knight. You're a hostile takeover predator. Your job is to drive me out. And of course, I'm going to fight tooth and nail against you. I'm going to find every piece of dirt I can on you. Then I'm going to drop poison pills. Poison pills? Yeah. Oh, my board of directors here, where if you get rid of us, we get $100 million each. That's a golden parachute. And it's a poison pill from hell. That'll scare you off. If that doesn't work, I'm going to find you. And we're going to work out a deal so that I'm going to give you a couple of positions, your corporation a couple of positions on my board of directors. I'm going to give you really nice salaries, going to do all kinds of things for you. And you are going to start buying shares to acquire position yourself so that you have votes. You have a proxy say as well. That's a white knight. Now, what you are going to do is try to drive the stock price up to make it very unpalatable for you to take position. That's going to hurt you. It's also going to hurt him, too, because he's going to be paying a high price. So it better be worth his while. I'm going to have to make it worth your while for you to defend my position in this company. This is hostile takeovers, mergers and acquisitions. This is what I used to do, M&As. And it's fun until it's not fun. It's fun until... You find out that when you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, people use guns, unfortunately, sometimes, and use other means, unspeakable things that some of them did in that time. I mean, I even had a lawyer at one point. He was an old, crusty Arkansas lawyer. He said, I can't believe they just did what they did. And I don't think I can't even tell you what it was. It would be illegal to, well, it would be not very appropriate to talk about what they did. Gee, so funny how nasty people get about $100 million, $500 million. But anyway, so you can have classes of stock for different levels of voting power. You can have mergers and acquisitions, hostile takeovers, all that kind of stuff can go on. But stock is a common stock. That's what you think of when you think of investments. That's what you think of when you think of finance. That's what you think of when you hear about people who've got money that they want to put into something for retirement. It's a lot of it's about stocks and stocks, not even bonds so much. It's stocks. And this is where the world gets exciting and active and all that. Okay. Now, let me make a distinction here. First of all, I'm going to give you a formulas, and this can get really confusing unless you just follow my process. Trust this process, and it's not nothing. It's actually what I'm going to say now becomes very much less confusing if you trust the process, and we do it a couple of times by this mechanical way. But I start with something important. The intrinsic value of a share of common stock is not the same as the price in the market. The market price is bouncing around every which way, every day. The intrinsic value is an underlying expectation based upon the physics of nature. So when we do this kind of finance, I'm not showing you how to buy today, sell tomorrow, trade here, trade there. I'm showing you how to create long-haul value. And if that sounds boring, if it sounds like, oh, that's just theory, I'm going to show you on Monday how this theory becomes a very big reality if you trust the process over a very long period of time. To give you an idea, in the Nazis were just causing all kinds of trouble in Europe, and we were trying to help the British keep going while the Nazis were blockading their supply lines and throwing V2 bombs into their cities and all this. But the merchant marine fleet, we were sending ships with supplies over there to Great Britain, get them food and clothing and all the needs that they would have. But the problem was that the Nazis were floating these little submarines in packs. They were called wolf packs. And these U-boats, as they were, would just sneak up on these merchant marine ships and just pop and drop one. Hundreds of merchant mariners were drowned, and the ship was lost. Thousands of these ships were lost this way. We couldn't do anything about it because at that point we had not developed long-range fighter support aircraft, so we couldn't escort them over. And so once they were out there in the ocean following the shipping lanes, the U-boats just came up and dropped them, killing, ultimately, I think, like tens of thousands of merchant mariners. They weren't even soldiers. They were just sailors. Were killed this way. Okay, well, an idea came about. Look, stock markets are, we even knew back then, we knew that stock prices were completely random. They were not predictable. But they had an expected value. Just like a stock, over time, the stock price on the market is going to do all kinds of wild, crazy things. But it has an underlying intrinsic value, the expectation, what I'm going to teach you today. Well, we did a quick little algorithm that changed a stock price change into a navigational change of a ship. Send the signals over there every minute. Turn this, turn this, turn this. Because across the Atlantic Ocean, up and down and going back and forth and around, they would eventually end up where they wanted, at the ports in Great Britain. Nazis could not figure it out. They're best mathematicians. How are they doing this? How do we not know where they are at any given minute? That's because you can't know. It's random. That's the whole point. Well, I can predict this stock price. No, you can't. Don't do it. Don't believe any idiot asshole who tells you you can. They're lying. It's just like we did. And if you don't believe me, we saved, by the time, once we got this into place, they never did find. One time they actually, if I recall the story, a U-boat was prowling and up the shipping lane. And it was right at about the time that one of these ships crossed the shipping lane, nearly had a collision. But that was about as close as they came to it. This is what I'm trying to emphasize to you. I am not going to teach you that we can do magic that we can't do. We can, however, I mean, maybe there's some psychics out there or something like that. Madam Zabita's psychic hotline and stock market analysis house. But what I'm showing you is that underlying the expectation of the process. Interestingly enough, the work that was done to figure this whole bizarre, you know, random walk thing out was done in the late 1800s. And a fellow who is rather famous, you will recognize his name, he won the Nobel Prize not for what you think he would have, but for his work on what's called Brownian motion, random motion. The guy's name was Albert Einstein. This was what he won his Nobel Prize for. And then there were a couple of others who applied it to stock markets, and history was made. Although, a little secret, Albert really wasn't as brilliant as everyone makes him out to be. It was the woman that was in the class with him that he got involved with. She was the genius. Once he'd done all this work, then he divorced her and married his cousin. Little secret of history. Okay. Now, I've got to find someone I can insult. You. Okay. You, sir, you are just not up to the snuff that I wanted my son to be. And you are my son. May God help this. Your mother, if she were alive, it would kill her. Mom, come up from the grave. Look at this. It'll kill you again. But you see, that's the whole thing about being a good teacher or being a good parent, is not seeing the loser or the lost soul or the kid who can't get up for school. Not seeing that. Well, seeing it, but also seeing what that kid's going to be down the road. It's good to see you. Damn, you look good. And you're looking at, you're 15 years old, and Dad, why are you looking at me like a pervert? No, I'm just looking at you when you're 30 years old and you're a damn fine kid. Okay? That's the thing that we're looking here. The first thing we need to do is to find the horizon value of a stock. What is that stock going to be worth once it stabilizes? You see, stocks, companies are very unstable in their early years. They're bouncing up and down. But after a period of time, they're going to get the message from consultants like me or others, attorneys, accountants. It's time to start growing up. It's time to stop being a jerk, and it's time to start looking at dividends. And not just a dividend here, hey, here's a dividend, and then 2 years you don't give anything. It's about this time when the company is, and this is a kind of a weird word, it is valuable in the sense that we have an equation that can find the present value of an infinite stream of dividends, except the dividends aren't flat, they're constant growth. So what we want to do is find that place where the dividends stabilize to a constant growth. And then we value all the other dividends before that individually. Now this can be a pain in the butt. Let me show you. Zero, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. Now, the company, I think I already told you about this. Companies say, well, is it time to start paying a dividend? Well, it might be. I give them this lecture, look. Once you start paying a dividend, it becomes an expectation that you're going to keep doing this. So don't just think, well, we had a good year this year, so let's get him a dividend. If you're not sure, you're going to be having good years, so you can do that after that. Or you communicate it to them. In one case, these aren't the real numbers, but I said, okay, our shareholders have been patient with us, so what we'll do is we're going to declare a dividend of 10 cents a share. And we're going to send them a letter. Look, we appreciate you. You have stood by us as owners of the company. And so we are going to issue a 10 cent per share dividend. Now, for the next 2 years, we probably won't do that because we're going to be plowing every penny we make on your behalf back into the company to grow it. And then we expect that we will probably begin dividends again in 3 years. Just communication with them. Just this is how you want to do it. And so, one way or the other, though, you are going to have a period of instability. Let's say in year one, you're going to pay a 10 cent per share dividend. In year two, you're going to pay a 50 cent per share dividend. In year three, you're going to pay no dividend. In year four, you're going to pay a $1 dividend. In year five, you're going to pay $1.25. And then ever after that, you are going to grow that dividend by 4% every year after that. On average. Now, the first thing, this can be a real pain in the backside because let's say you had a discount rate. Let's say our discount rate is 7%. 0.10 times 1 plus 0.07 to the negative 1 plus 0.50 times 1 plus 0.07 to the negative 2 plus 0 times 1 plus 0.07 to the negative 3 plus 1. This can get real old real fast. You can make a mistake easily, just taking all these present values back. And then this horizon value here. Here is a formula. The price of a constant growth dividend is the dividend at the beginning, grown one period. So in other words, it's the D1, one period out, over the discount rate minus the growth rate. That's the intrinsic value at the horizon. This is what we call the horizon value. This is the expected value of the stock at year five. This is the expected value of the stock at year five. Yes?
Is it always at year five?
No, it's whatever the year is where it stabilizes. You see, year five was where it stabilized. Year six, the dividend would be one plus, what is that? This is $1.30 dividend. So in other words, it stabilizes at year five. Now here's the caution. The only place you'll use 1.25 is to get the horizon value. Don't use it to find the present value. I'm going to show you on a calculator how we do this. Follow the steps one by one, and you will not make a mistake. And you'll ace one of the hardest questions on the final. Watch. I'm going to use a formula, or rather an app, I'm going to use an app that you're not supposed to use for this. It wasn't designed for this. But it works. Magnificently. It's perfect. Later in the course, I'm going to show you how we determine whether a project is a go or a no-go. It's a very straightforward way. But it's called the net present value method of capital budgeting. This apps, finance, go down here to NPV. Now you see this number 7, NPV. This was meant to look at how much you spend at the beginning of a project against how much you make in present value from the future years of the project. That's what the NPV is meant for. It's to, again, compare how much you spend at the beginning of a project against how much that project makes for you in the years after that as present values of the future expected cash flows. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say, all right, calculator, for this purpose, I'm going to say, all right, always start with the discount. 7. Now remember, this is an app. So here I will use just the per 7. Okay. Now inside of this, I'm going to do a formula where you have to use the actual decimal. But anyway, now in a TI 83, whenever you are finished with or you're about to start another parameter, you give it a comma. Now, this NPV formula expects for you to next tell it how much you spend on the project. And I'm going to say, oh, we're not spending anything. This isn't a project. So you always, for what I'm doing here, you always put a 0. And I say, okay, I'm finished with that, comma. Now, TI-83s expect you to put a string of cash flows in braces. That would be second parenthesis. Here's where you got to be careful. Parenthesis, this thing, I am forever making this mistake myself. Students are too, and you get an error. It looks on an LCD screen, the brace and the parenthesis look so much alike. Just be freaking careful about it, okay? Now we're going to put in the cash flows. Okay. 10 cents. Done with that one, comma. 0.5. Done with that one, comma. 0. Yes, put in the 0 because it's counting years. Well, how does it know it's years? Because I gave it an annual percentage discount. Comma. $1. Comma. $1.25. Uh-oh, no. What you now put in is the horizon value. That's 1.25 times 1 plus 0.04. I mean, I could put in, I'm being a little pedantic there. Divided by 0.07 minus 0.04. Now, let me caution you before I go on. This, I am forever forgetting this, and so are a lot of students. Trap that denominator in freaking parentheses, okay? The second thing is, this is an arithmetic calculation. So these are actual decimals of percentages. The third thing, don't calculate the horizon value and then put it in. Look at what I can do here. I can have the calculator do it. A single run of keystrokes. Now, the next thing you're going to want to do is say, okay, I am finished with the cash flows. So that means that I'm going to close the brace. Because that was the last one. And then I'm going to close off the app with a parenthesis. Now, one thing, you're saying, well, wait a minute, fat boy. Where did the $1.25 go? It's already there in the horizon value. That's where I actually even made that mistake myself a few times. I put in the $1.25 and then the horizon value. Don't. That horizon value includes the $1.25. And you say, enter. Well, spank me. There's your intrinsic value. $32.19. I'm going to do another one of these, just like this one, so that you can get the hang of this, you're comfortable with it, okay? Because I can guarantee you, try to imagine, you do all this manually, take the present value of 10 cents, plus the present value of 50 cents, plus the present value of zero, plus the present value, and then get out there to the horizon value and do that one, and then add them all up. Look at how fast this is. If you get the hang of this, you're, like I said, you're going to nail one of the hardest questions, or a couple of them, on the test. Let me do something real quick here. 1.25 times 1.04 divided by 0.07 minus 0.0. Right here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to calculate the horizon value just to show you what it is. Because on the test, what I'm going to do is say, what's my horizon value? What's the current intrinsic price of the stock? So if I do that here, enter. The horizon value is $43.33. Now what that means, just to be clear, that is the expected price of the stock in 5 years. That's what that number tells you. We're saying, well, that's higher than it is now. Well, duh, because we have to take the present value of that plus the present value of the dividend. It's going to be less than that horizon value. But, again, this is not the market price. This is the intrinsic price in 5 years. That's what I was talking about, that long haul. What we expect to see. Now, it could be, if it's higher than $43 in 5 years, then it's overvalued. And I would probably sell it out of my portfolio. If it's like $38 in 5 years, well, I'd say that's undervalued, and I'd buy some of it. This tells you what it should be, what the expectation is based upon physics. Where it actually is can be something a little bit different. Okay, do another one. I mean, the best way for you to get this is just to have examples of it. Okay, let me do one. One, two, three, 4. Okay, we got a $2 a share dividend, and then it bounces down to 85 cents. Then it comes up to $1.50. Then it is $1.75. And then it starts growing,
at a constant rate of 2.5% per year ever after that.
Oh, and we're going to take a discount rate here of 8.5%. So let me switch over here. Just bear with me one second here, so the live audience can see these numbers. It's $2 year one, 85 cents in year two, $1.50 in year three, $1.75 in year four, and then from there it grows at a constant rate of 2.5% per year ever after that, for the foreseeable future, as we usually say. Here we go. Apps, finance, NPV. First thing we do is give it the discount rate. Now, I'm done with that. When I say I'm done with that, that's a comma. And now I'm going to say, what's the initial investment? Well, for these problems, it's always zero. I'm done with that, so I say a comma. Now I'm going to give it the cash flow. Okay, that's always, this calculator wants me to say braces. Here's the cash flow. $2, comma, 85 cents, comma, $1.50, comma. Okay, we're at the horizon. We're going to try to do this raw. Okay, let's take that $1.75. And grow it one period at 2.5%. And then divide it by the discount rate, 0.085 minus 0.025. Notice that trap. You've got to trap that parenthesis. That you've got to trap that R minus G in parentheses. Don't forget to do that. And say, all right, now I'm done with the free cash flows. Second, braces. And I'm done with this app. Now I'm going to let you get all that down. I was plowing that first one a little faster than I should have. Just get it all written down. If you got this on your notes, then this is not going to be a problem. This problem isn't going to be a problem for you. Okay? Survey says $25.31 is the intrinsic value of the stock. Now, while you're getting that filled in there, I will mention, if you hit enter and you get the error, you'll get one quit, two go to. Just hit two and go to. Now here's where, over the past years that I've been doing this and watching students and me screw it up, here's where you're most likely to have the error is caused by. First one is you put a parenthesis where there was a brace, should have been a brace. And again, that's really hard to see because on these LCD screens, they look so much alike, especially on a little one. So that'll be your first thing. Go through and look to make sure that all of the braces are braces and parentheses are parentheses. The second thing is the next one is to make sure here at the end with this kind of problem, you should see parenthesis, brace, parenthesis. Now, try your best not to impress the calculator. Well, I can do 8.5 minus 0.5% in my head. Fight that, because you're just going to make it more likely that you have tripped. If you just do it by the formula, R minus G, you should see parenthesis, brace, parenthesis at the end. If you don't, that was why you got to go to error. Now, the other one that is oftentimes one I see, this comma, for some reason you want to go right to the brace to do the cash flow, this comma is missing. Or it's comma, zero, comma. You should see comma, zero, comma. Now, I'm throwing up the flags that I've seen as the way you can make get an error on it. Lord knows we all try our best to find a new way to get an error. So there's that. Now, the last comment is about, is this realistic? And I actually asked myself that some years back. Do companies really stabilize their dividend to a constant growth? So I went through back in the day. And then just about a couple of years ago, I did it again for a couple of companies. I looked at their dividends, old companies, more mature, stable companies. Okay, let's take their 2008 dividend divided by their 2007 dividend minus one. 2009 dividend divided by 2008 dividend minus one. And did that over and over again for several companies, including, I think, one of them was Target. Clear up to the present. I'll be darned. The growth rate was never absolutely the same, obviously, because of dollars and cents and all that. But there was a stable growth rate. One company after another, they had a dividend that was growing at a relatively constant rate over a number of years. Now, there were some times when you'd see a dividend dip, and then it would come right back in. Once you threw that one out as sort of an outlier, sure enough, they'd have that. You could tell that there was a conscious plan of the board of directors to maintain the stability of the growth of the rate of the dividend. And that, of course, like I said, that makes Wall Street happy, because predictability is part of portfolio management. And when you've got those ginormous fund managers on Wall Street buying stocks, they don't like a whole lot of wild cards in their portfolio. That can be a toxin in a case like a Tesla, where a lot of them know it was a big mistake, and they don't want the instability, so they're holding up a corpse, because otherwise it would really throw off the stability of their portfolio growth path. So it's a bad thing in some ways, but in another ways, it's telling corporations, there's a point where you have to grow up and you have to do things by corporate standards. You have to be a citizen of the world instead of some bad boy in the United States or where in China or whatever. And you also have to get dividends and stabilize them so that we can predict the future at some point. Maybe not today, but down the road. That's all I have for you today.